Welcome to The Buzz. I'm Christopher Conover. This week, the long-awaited return of a groundbreaking space mission.
Entry was at
EO milestone. SRC is experiencing maximum heating.
Early Sunday morning, the OSIRIS-REx spacecraft jettisoned a capsule containing the sample from the asteroid Bennu.
EO milestone, we have confirmed parachute deployment.
Wow. And after an exhilarating...
About 4 hours later, it parachuted into the Utah desert where a team from the University of Arizona and NASA was waiting.
Just a sigh of relief from the team. I can hear some applause here. The team on the WB-57 doing
EO milestone, we have touchdown. I repeat, EO. SRC has touchdown.
And touchdown of the OSIRIS-REx sample return capsule. A journey of a billion miles to...
UA's Dr. Dante Loretta is the principal investigator for the project. He was on the recovery team and met with the media a few hours later.
Well, today capped the end of an almost 20-year adventure for me. I got involved in this program in February of 2004. When we first were talking to our friends at Lockheed, it seemed like magic. Like, they said, pick an asteroid, Dante, and we'll bring samples back to the Earth for you to study in your laboratory. And I can tell you, this is the end of a very long spell, right? We've been casting it for a long time. And it was great to be part of the recovery team. It was pulse pounding, I'm sure, for you watching it, even more for those of us in the helicopters, waiting for that main chute. I was fortunate enough to be one of the first people to lay eyes on the capsule, and boy, did we stick that landing. It was just sitting right there, a few tens of feet right off a nice road, perfect place for the helicopters to land. Didn't move, it didn't roll, didn't bounce. It just made a tiny little divot in the Utah soil. So we got our job done really fast. You know, we did a lot of rehearsals. We always rehearse and practice on this team. That's why we always achieve these high levels of excellence. And I can't say I couldn't be more proud. And just to remind you, not only did we bring this mission in on schedule, under budget, and delivered more science than we had even thought was possible with the encounter with Bennu, but we think we've got a lot of sample in that science canister, and we can't wait to crack into it. For me, the real science is just beginning. I grew up as a laboratory chemist, studying meteorites and particles from the Stardust mission, which NASA brought back in 2006. People have asked about, you know, the planetary protection. We did go through extensive planetary protection reviews. We were unrestricted Earth return because Bennu is a near-Earth asteroid. Probably material from this asteroid has been delivered to the Earth at some point in the past. It's also a very small body that's constantly exposed to ionizing radiation, and no life forms that we know of would be able to survive that kind of environment. So very, very low risk. In fact, we're more worried about Earth biology contaminating the sample. The key objective for me, and one of the driving objectives of this program, is to try to understand, did carbon-rich asteroids like Bennu deliver the compounds that may have led to the origin of life on our planet, the origin of Earth as a habitable world? And so we don't want biological organisms interacting with this, so we plan to exclude it from any contact with bacteria or anything else that might compromise our scientific investigation. And we're going to start processing that sample, we hope, as early as Tuesday of next week.
To the untrained eye, the landing looked perfect, with the capsule floating peacefully down to Earth under its red and white striped parachute. But Mike Moreau, the deputy project manager for the mission, said there were some tense moments because the first parachute, the drogue chute as it's called, which was supposed to slow the initial descent, may not have worked quite as planned.
Because we don't know if we can see that in the imagery. The imagery that we saw was not positive. What we do know is that the main parachute came out. It came out a little bit earlier than we expected, but that time difference was within the family of variation that we expect from the atmosphere. So that is not really a surprise to us. You know, Tim's talking about analyzing all the data. One of the great things about landing here is we have all of this photo documentation from four different camera systems that were around. We also have the WB imagery. We don't have that available yet. We have not been able to look at that. I can tell you that I could not see whether or not the drogue was deployed in the imagery that I had available in real time in the ops room. That's not necessarily an indication that it did not deploy. But I can't confirm that I saw it in that imagery. But what we're going to do is what we always do is go back and look at this in great detail, and that's one of the advantages of landing here is we've got a ton of data, and we're going to go back and look at that, and we'll reconstruct exactly what happened. Yep. But the bottom line is we landed when the main parachutes came out. That was the moment that I was waiting for, and that for me was success. I knew that we had done, we were successful and we were going to get that sample today.
For Dante Loretta, those were tense moments with not a lot of information.
We were in the helicopter waiting, and so all we got was telemetry from our range control officer here at UTTR. So I didn't have all the cool video and things like that everybody else was seeing here. So I was really trying to hear through helicopter noise. And we heard passing through 100,000 feet, passing through 60,000 feet, and I was getting a little worried. And then we heard main chute detected, and I literally broke into tears. I mean, and I'm probably going to do it right now just thinking about it, because that was the moment I knew we made it home. And, you know, I'm weary at this point. I've been thinking about this and focusing on it, and all of my energy and all of my will has gone into making this thing a success. And I knew the moment the chute opened, that was it. We knew what to do from that point forward. There was no surprises left. And it was overwhelming relief, gratitude, pride, awe, and really trying to convince myself that I wasn't dreaming. And it's the end of a journey and the beginning of a new one, because we're going into the atomic realm. We're going into the mineralogy, the chemistry, the organics, and the history of the solar system, which is what I signed up for all those years ago, was to do the laboratory investigation on this material. So I'm getting really excited about getting into the lab and really digging into these samples and answering all the questions that have come up before we launch, and especially from our encounter with asteroid Bennu. A lot of surprises there, a lot of new science ideas came out of that.
The sample is now back in Houston at the Johnson Space Center. The University of Arizona will get 25% of the sample, which will be brought back to the Tucson campus. Just hours after the landing, Dante said he cannot wait to see what's inside.
They wouldn't let me shake it like a kid in Christmas trying to see what I can hear inside there yet. So, and they probably won't let me do that, right, Eileen? So I have to be patient, and I'm really exercising patience. I understand we need to go methodically, systematically through the hardware. We have a very well-defined procedure. The curation team knows the importance of getting sample out to the science as quickly as possible while maintaining the integrity of the collection, and I'm fully on board with that. OSIRIS-REx is about the science, but it's also about the legacy, and the legacy is that long-term collection, and we work hand-in-hand together as science and curation to make sure both of those are achieved in a timely manner. In terms of when I get to relax, that's a good question. We've got a busy week ahead of us. We're flying to Houston tomorrow morning at the crack of dawn, so not tomorrow, and then Tuesday morning we hope we get that canister open, and I expect we'll see some dust, and we have a plan to sample that dust and get into the science instruments at JSC right away, just to say, did we bring back what we thought, or is this something completely different? And knowing Bennu, it might be a little both, right? So I can't wait to see that. I have a big party planned on October 14th in downtown Tucson. The whole city is celebrating with us. Mayor Romero of Tucson declared today OSIRIS-REx Day, by the way. Thank you, Mayor Romero, for that. And so I think October 14th, we should have a pretty good idea of what the nature of the collection is. We should be at the final stages of allocating the first major masses to the science team. And yeah, we're going to throw down.
Since the beginning of the OSIRIS-REx mission, AZPM has been there to document the project. Producer John Booth is finishing a one-hour documentary that will air this fall on our TV side, and joined us in the studio to talk about the documentary and the history of the mission.
Dante Loretta was hired as he wasn't even a second at the beginning. He was just helping them get the grant. OSIRIS-REx to Bennu and back is going to be a one-hour soup-to-nuts story about this mission. From the beginning of Dante wanting to study extraterrestrial life and being laughed at, to then becoming who he is now, leading major missions to do exactly that. And the twists and the turns along the way of suddenly they did want to fund this type of thing. And, you know, OSIRIS-REx attempts to get the money failed several times before they got the money. And then you have to design and build it. And just the growth of not only Dante, but this whole team, all the different people on this team that are some of which, a lot of which are still there. You're going to watch all the way back to 2011 to now, you're going to watch the growth of these people. One of which, Danny, she was a student.
She was an undergrad.
An undergrad student when she started on the mission, and she's taking over OSIRIS-APEX, the next mission. So not only do you get to witness their story, which is incredible, what passion, what dedication to science and getting it right. That's why this mission succeeded. Every one of those people are, you know, Donchies is in front of the camera, but most of the time he's in front of the camera, he's telling you about these other people and how incredible they are. Well, they're going on to lead other missions, which, by the way, was Michael Drake's legacy, always thinking about the next generation.
And Michael Drake, in case you and I are steeped in this, Michael Drake, this was his original idea, and he died a few months after the funding came through.
Yeah, he was already a legend and an incredible scientist, and he built teams to study Mars, and then this was, but this was his dream. This whole mission was his dream. Yeah, and he died right after we got the funding. And Dante tells some stories that I guarantee are nowhere else but maybe his book, about how that happened and how they picked up and kept going. And the success is in the, you know, the return just recently. So this will be, the whole hour is going to be all the dramas, the setbacks, you know, the Russian rockets, all the scary moments. And then, of course, the success of it at the end. It's stunning.
You mentioned something, and again, I've worked on the project for many years, our OSIRIS-REx projects. You've worked on our OSIRIS-REx projects for many years here at AZPM. We have something, AZPM, that really nobody else has. We have all the footage because it's been here on the University of Arizona campus, which gives you, as the producer of this documentary, some advantages and probably some disadvantages because, wow, we got a lot of footage.
We do. And I not only give AZPM and you and the brilliant doc producer, Tom Gillespie,
who started the project who years ago,
right,
before
and
he
did,
retired.
And did, you know, reported or did docs on the Mars projects and understood the science here and followed it and followed it. And to be clear, I am not producing all original material. I'm using docs and stories from Arizona Illustrated and reports that you've done some of the ones that were on our public affairs shows and lacing them together with new material to tell the whole. So I'm definitely standing on the shoulders of giants there, because AZPM has been reporting on this story long before anybody else cared. And now we're looking at all this footage, which gives you, as you suggested, a wonderful opportunity and a lot of tape to look through. And some of it's actually tape.
Yeah, it's been going on that long that when we started this project, we were still shooting tape. I know one of my favorite interviews that I did was, you said, is going to go into this doc because it hasn't been seen yet. And it's with Dante Loretta, the principal investigator, in 2020. Mm-hmm. And I asked him about this new virus that was around, which
it wasn't just
COVID.
2020. It was March 10th, 2020. And if somebody asks me, when did the pandemic really start affecting us? March 13th, Friday that week, or when the first, you know, shutdowns were happening and everybody's realizing this is serious. On March 10th, you asked him, well, how's it going to affect the mission? And he gives an answer. He's so, you know, he thinks ahead of so many things. He said, well, you know, we're protecting our people. We're not getting groups unless we need to. He was doing all that before the rest of us thought to do it. However, even he could not see what was happening. So yes, I will be cutting from that answer to a tumbleweed rolling across, you know, Broadway downtown and no humans on the streets, because, you know, COVID hit everything. And only, what was it, 9 months later, they were doing the touch and go, which is grabbing the sample. And they delayed it by a couple of months just to give everybody some mental, you know, rest. And then they pulled it off. If you remember, that was just an amazing moment of scientific success.
You and I were talking the other day about it, and one of the stories you told me that has come out of an interview you just did with Dante right before return was the story of him standing in the Antarctic looking at a piece of a meteorite as a young scientist and realizing there's a better way to do it. And it turns out OSIRIS-REx is the way to do it. But the ideas so far ago. If you can relate that story, it's a great story.
Yeah, they're up there. He's up with, I forget the gentleman's name, but he is heading the analysis team of OSIRIS-REx, this other gentleman. I'm sorry, I don't have his name right there. But they're up, you know, on the ice seeking meteor fragments or meteors to study, to try to figure out, you know, what elements are there. Are there any elements that point towards the origins of life on Earth? And they're looking at a rock where the snow is melting on it just because the sun's hitting it. And they realize that, you know, it's contaminating the sample as they're looking at it. There's no way at an atomic level they can separate those elements. And so he wonders aloud during this interview, well, how are we going to study an asteroid if we can't find it here? And he pauses and he goes, I guess we'll have to go get one. And that was in, you know, the interview was a few weeks ago, but they realized that 20 years ago. And now the sample is back.
People may not realize that they built a clean room in Utah and immediately took the capsule into the clean room. There are huge clean rooms in Houston that we were able to tour earlier this summer for the documentary. That nobody's just opening it up with a screwdriver they picked up at the hardware store and popping it in a Ziploc bag and putting it in their carry-on.
They have gone to such extremes, which is the legacy of that realization 20 years ago, that they want to be able to study the samples as they existed to the extent they can on the asteroid. So we are looking at items that you couldn't do anywhere else. We are now looking at an sample of the asteroid as it exists in space to the extent that we can. I mean, and that's why they have the gloves, the glove rooms and the nitrogen purge and all that. But you coined a phrase, and this is what we have to look forward to, the blue marble. And I'd like to relate that story because I asked him about that as well. And what's the blue marble? Okay, let's say they open it up. It's a lot more complicated than that. And they look at these, you know, this sample, these grains of rock, and there's something they don't recognize, a blue marble. I asked him, well, what do you do that? And he goes, well, I get 25% of it. And that's what right. He means, of course, is U of A gets 25% of the sample. And they will be studying everything, especially if there's a blue marble, for the next 100 years. He even said, we haven't invented the science that we need to test things that we don't know we're going to test. So in the future, this sample is going to pay dividends to science forever.
And the interesting thing about that is when we were in Houston, we went to the Apollo labs, which are still up and functioning, talking to the head curator of the Apollo labs. They still have 85% of the material brought back by the Apollo missions from the moon that are still in pristine condition. They haven't done anything with them yet, but they get requests all the time from scientists. And when I've talked to Dante, he said, oh, sure, there are kids, he said to me a couple of months ago, there are kids in elementary school right now who will be doing their PhD projects and beyond on the samples that came back this week.
Yep. And you point something else out. The University of Arizona has been involved in every, and Michael Drake points this out in the doc, every planetary NASA mission since 1960, I think it was, all the Apollo missions. We mapped the moon. You know, JFK said, we're going to the moon. And then he turned over and said, who knows anything about the moon? And it was the University of Arizona. So OSIRIS-REx is also a legacy project. It also is standing on the shoulders of just lots of people that have been keeping the University of Arizona and the world of science, you know, moving forward in planetary exploration.
So all the time you have spent working on this documentary, and unfortunately for you, you're not finished yet because there's still a lot of footage that we just had the team come back from Utah with when it landed, and we still have the reveal of First Science to deal with and all of that. What's that blue marble, I guess, in the documentary for you that people can look forward to?
Well, two things. I got to point out that Brian Nelson, Arizona Illustrated producer, has done work. You've done work. I mentioned Tom Gillespie.
We can't forget Nate Huffman, who has
Nate Huffman, who's shot so much of this. Yeah, and edited so much, and he's editing the documentary. So the first thing I have to say, that it's just an appreciation of the amount of detailed, careful, colorful work that the staff of AZPM has been. And I'm retired now, so I can fly the flag high, and so I really am so impressed by the attention and telling us, you know, we do the news very well, but we also do the other side of the coin, and that is long, deep discovery. As far as the mission, I have to tell you, when I returned to Tucson in 2013, one of the things I've seen in that 10 years that's been a constant is this mission. And I remember launch, you know, I remember tearing up at launch. I was on the mall watching the big screen. I remember tearing up at Touch and Go, and I teared up on Sunday when it came back. And it's not, I mean, the science is amazing, but it's just the passion and hard work and just the knowledge that this team has in the face of, you know, as Dante calls the Bennu, the trickster. The trickster keeps throwing them curveballs, and they just catch them. So that's what I'm just blown away by, those two teams, AZPM and OSIRIS-REx. They created this great story, and we get to tell it.
All right. Well, everybody looks forward to seeing the final product. November 22nd, I think, is our air date. So.
OSIRIS-REx to Bennu and back.
All right. Well, thanks for sitting down with us.
My pleasure.
That was John Booth, the producer of AZPM's documentary OSIRIS-REx to Bennu and Back, which airs this fall. Scientific work is underway at NASA as the team samples the dust on the outside of the craft and the containers. Principal investigator Dr. Dante Loretta says that could yield some exciting results.
Yeah, we have a great suite of analyses planned. We call this our Tiger Team for a quick look analysis of the sample. There's some great instruments right there at Johnson Space Center. We'll be sending some of the material to our partners at the Natural History Museum in London. So what we're really looking for is what hypothesis one. And if you're interested, I posted the sample analysis plan on archive.org, so anybody can download it. It's free to all. It's about 300 pages, so just get ready. If you're really wanting to dig into that, it's quite an engrossing read, I think. And it'll lay out hypothesis one, which is, did we accurately characterize the bulk mineralogy and chemistry of the surface of the asteroid? I.e., did our remote sensing instruments work, and did our data processing lead us to the right conclusions? So I'm going to be looking for the basics. Are there clay minerals there? Are there carbonate minerals? Are there organic molecules? Do we see the iron oxides, the other things that we predicted on the asteroid surface? I'm sure there's going to be surprises in there. Once you get into the dust scale, you'll probably start to see a wide level of diversity. But it's kind of like a sneak peek of what might be in store for us. We don't know if the dust, there might be variations in mineralogy and composition by particle size. The larger ones may be more robust to disaggregation, and the loose stuff, like the one we crushed when we tagged the surface, may be preferentially in the fine-grained components. So it really is to give us a sense of, what are we dealing with? Are we way out of the box in terms of what we built this big plan around? Or does it look like, yeah, we got it pretty close, there's some surprises, but we can still continue with the sample analysis plan that we laid out?
If you ask members of the OSIRIS-REx team about the future of the science, they say the sample is the gift that keeps on giving, and they hope it inspires future generations.
I think OSIRIS-REx is an excellent example of the inspirational value of these kinds of activities. The reason why we should be investing our taxpayer dollars in these missions of exploration, of course, the science is fantastic, the engineering is beyond amazing, but the inspirational value is really where the long-term payoff comes from these. I started out as a young, naive assistant professor in 2004 when my mentor, Mike Drake, believed in me, brought me in as his deputy, and together we worked for 7 years to come up with a mission concept that was credible and that the agency felt like they could invest in with the right amount of scientific return. And I know Mike would be incredibly proud of that. And it was a key part of his vision from day one that this is about the future generations. And Danny Della Giustina, who's now the PI of OSIRIS-APEX, I officially congratulated her right when the SRC released from the spacecraft. My PI ship follows the capsule, and she takes the spacecraft on to the next adventure. She started with us in 2004 as well as a freshman at the University of Arizona when she enrolled in my asteroids seminar. And she led a student experiment design for a discovery version of what we called OSIRIS back then. She was going to be the student experiment lead. She left for a little while to go pursue her advanced degrees, but came back as the imaging scientist. And now is the deputy PI for OSIRIS-REx. She'll continue in that role through the sample analysis phase and also as the principal investigator for OSIRIS-APEX. And she is strongly committed to bringing the future generations along with her on that team. And we've got 5.5 years to Apophis and then 18 months at that amazing target. And you're going to see a lot of young people involved in that mission. And I can just tell you, I love working with kids. I go out into the community quite a lot, Boys and Girls Clubs of Tucson, local Tucson schools. We're hosting a great event at the Tucson Children's Museum right now to have the city celebrate this activity. And I also teach undergraduate and graduate students. And so many of them said, we are here because of OSIRIS-REx. We came to Tucson because the OSIRIS-REx mission was based here. And it was just an amazing example of what people can do when we put aside our differences, we focus on a common goal. We can achieve great things. This country can achieve great things, but we have to work together to make that happen.
And that's the buzz for this week. Tune in next week as we look back at the year since the on-campus shooting of University of Arizona professor Dr. Tom Meixner. You can find all our episodes online at azpm.org and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for The Buzz Arizona. We're also on the NPR app. Zach Ziegler is our producer with production help from Desiree Tucker. Our music is by Enter the Haggis. I'm Christopher Conover. Thanks for listening.
Arizona Public Media's original programming is made possible in part by the Community Service Grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.